Hi, everyone. Thank you so much, Chris, for that moving and thoughtful introduction. And a big thank you to both you and to Joan and Anna for hosting and organizing. I am so happy to be here with all of you and reading with Sheila and Jeff and Rosalie. And I just have to say, I have a lot of personal history in Pittsburgh. I went to school there and my husband's family's from there. So I actually have attended the series in person as an undergrad, and I have a distinct memory of doing the open mic with, you know, shaky hands, sharing one of my poems there. And for those of you who are from Pittsburgh, just to give you an idea of when I was there, it was in the phase of time when there was a Roy Rogers in the bottom of the cathedral. Allen Ginsberg gave a reading on CMU's campus, and the Beehive was still alive and kicking. And it's also a period of time when I met three of my dearest writing mentors, and they are Geetha Kothari, Judith Vollmer, and Shalini Puri. So it's especially an honor for me to be part of this series. I have four poems to share tonight, and these are all from my second book, Bring Now the Angels, which came out right at the beginning of the pandemic in April of last year. And sort of, you know, riffing off of Christopher's introduction and all the heaviness and grief that we are working our way through, this book was very much a book about grief and working through grief. The first half is largely about my father's three-year battle with multiple myeloma, and the second half kind of broadens out into other kinds of grief, more public forms of grief. So this first poem is from the first half of the book. It's called Bring Now the Angels. Bring now the angels. Bring now the angels to test your pulse as you sleep. Bring the healer, the howler, the listening ear. Bring an apothecary to mix the tincture. We need the salve, the tablet, the capsule of the hour. Bring sword eaters and those who will swallow fire. Fetch the guardian to flatten the wheelchair, to hoist it toward heaven. The public shuttle awaits the ceaseless trips to the clinic. To the bedside manor, summon witness. This medic's disdain toward patients, the physician's dismissal of pain, and call the druggist again to drug us senseless. Bring a nomad to index our debts, tuck each invoice into broken walls of regret. Call the cleric, the clerk, the messengers divine. Summon someone, collect the prayers, buried or burnt, tied to stones, sunken seas, dunked underwater until all dissolves. Bring now the scribe, let it be written. There is no shepherd, no Sherpa, no moonlight guide for these, the darkest journeys of our lives. Who will lift the shuttle above the outposts of the living? Who will watch it rise and rise? Who will clear a path among all the wreckage? Who will weave a nest for all the birds of passage? Who will bridge the gap between savage and salvage? Who will sing over wilting stalks, rough husks, silk still gleaming like hair in a dream? This next poem is one of the last poems that I wrote in the book manuscript. And it's one that came out of in the aftermath of the 2016 presidential election. I realized I was carrying around a lot of anger. And it wasn't just sort of general anger about the state of our country, but also personal anger toward people I'd known for a long time and grown up with in the small towns north of Pittsburgh and in southeastern Ohio. And I wasn't sure how to work through that anger, the bitterness and anger I was carrying around. But somewhere I came across the idea of self-forgiveness as a precursor to our forgiveness toward others. And so while that question still remains open for me about forgiveness, when it can happen, whether it can happen, in the meantime, this poem happens. Phase one. For leaving the fridge open last night, I forgive you. for conjuring white curtains instead of living your life. For the seedlings that wilt now in tiny pots, I forgive you. For saying no first, but yes as an afterthought. I forgive you for hideous visions after childbirth, brought on by loss of sleep, and when the baby woke repeatedly, for your silent rebuke in the dark, what's your beef? I forgive you for letting vines overtake the garden, for fearing your own propensity to love, for losing again your bag en route from San Francisco, for the equally heedless drive back on the caffeine-fueled return. I forgive you for leaving windows open in grain and soaking library books again, for putting forth only revisions of yourself with punctuation worked over instead of the disordered truth. I forgive you for singing mostly when the shower drowns your voice, for so admiring the drummer you failed to hear the drum. In forgotten tin cans, may forgiveness gather, pooling in gutters, gushing from pipes, a great steady rain of olives from branches, relieved of cruelty and petty meanness. With it, a flurry of wings, 13 gray pigeons, ointment reserved for healers and prophets. I forgive you. I forgive you for feeling awkward and nervous without reason, for bearing Keats's empty vessel with such calm you worried you had perhaps no moral center at all, for treating your mother with contempt when she deserved compassion. I forgive you. I forgive you. I forgive you for growing a capacity for love that is great, but matched only perhaps by your loneliness, for being unable to forgive yourself first so you could then forgive others and at last find a way to become the love that you want in this world. This next poem is a retelling of the tale of Jack and the Beanstalk, and it's in two voices. So you'll hear a questioner and then the person who's responding. It's called Choke. Was there a beanstalk, a golden egg-laying hen? No, just a magic seed, a courtyard of crooked men. Was there a giant? There must always be a giant. In how many ways did the giant try to choke you? He did not attempt this with his bare hands. In how many ways did the giant try to choke you? He didn't choke me. He choked the competition, flooded the market with magic seeds. Was magic involved? How else could he ensure economic chokehold? How else the power to ban sales of nature's seeds? Was magic involved? How else could he choke off a normal trade flow? How else, in revitalization's name, a new world economy? What life were you doomed to live? Must there always be doom in the developing world? What life were you doomed to live? Lifetime poverty, I was told. How did you pay $1,000 for your first bag of seeds? Alone, 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 alone. Forgive me, my children, my wife, alone. How did you know the seeds were enchanted? They only grow once. My pockets emptied without end. And what of the pesticides? The giant implied the magic seed has little need. Save your rupees, save your children. What did the seeds grow? Nothing every time. How many times did you try? Too many, then I took my life. Who weeps now over the blighted fields? My wife, my children, my God, what could I do? How many witnessed you drinking the pesticide? On our first date, we secretly strolled and tossed scraps to birds. What did the giant say when you died? From his heights, will he notice the smell of blood? Be he alive or be he dead, I'll grind his bones to make my bread. Who will pay the loans now that you're dead? Please tell the world what is happening here. And for my final poem, I have a poem in 7 sections, and it takes inspiration from a childhood toy, the Viewmaster, which I'm guessing many of you know is a pair of chunky binoculars, and you put in the slide and click through, and there are 7 images. Apparently now there is a virtual reality version of this experience. And so you'll see that this poem has 7 sections. And usually when I read this piece, I have to explain for folks who aren't familiar with Pittsburgh, just in case there isn't anyone familiar, or is someone who's not familiar with Pittsburgh, I have to explain about the one ways, the big one ways with, you know, 3 or 4 lanes going in one direction, and that one lane going in counter to all the rest of the traffic, and how that one lane is for the Pat bus. So you'll hear mention of the Pat bus here. I just wanted to say thanks again to Christopher, Joan, and Anna, and for all of you for tuning in today. And I'm really looking forward to hearing the other readers. Viewmaster Virtual Reality Starter Pack, Mortality Reel. 1. A canyon of memory floods as the zip line slips. First bike, first dance, first kiss, broken bone, and more. First love, wedding cake, 2 kids. Soft spot pulsing on each newborn's crown. And you, in the blur of greenery and river and craggy rock, you release every spring pulley or counterweight that ever held you back. 2. Slammed by a Pat bus, mercy, swift and painless. 7 angels gasp, but you are unperturbed, descending with a steaming non-fat chai tea latte into the counterflow lane from the curb. 3. One moment you leap and dance amid snow-topped mountain cap backdrop, and the next, without notice, you huddle in bed, doting spouse dropping 1 perfect tear upon your furrowed brow. Somewhere afar, a sitar twangs and wails, a mysterious virus, rare injury, lightning seizing your whole and healthy spine when you least expect it. No choreography for grief. An entire troop of sequined mourners, it seems, will fail to bring you back. 4. Legs crossed upon a mat in the dusty outpost, you attain such enlightenment that time slows, giving you full minutes to regard the smooth cartridge hurtling toward your chest. It makes of the air a gel, a web, a balloon stretched to snap. Welcome to bullet time. You were never so much in your life as you were around it, observing it, remarking on it. Given this moment of dead time, you can at last see from every given viewpoint. 5. Overpriced vintage fountain pen pokes through your bag, piercing your backside. Infection follows and you fall to sepsis, bringing credence to claims that daily writing involves risk. 6. Pitch darkness, silence, pure emptiness, a familiar voice in the distance. 7. The truth is, you don't see it coming even there in the wrinkled bed for the 6th, or is it 7th, visit that season. Your beloved covers a bowl of canned peaches, the only taste nowadays that appeals. You want to save it. You plan to eat it later. You wait for your children to arrive at the bedside as they always do, exhausted and deeply happy to see you still there, still alive, bright-eyed, but they know, shrinking. Your face is fuller now with fluids your kidneys retain, which helps everyone forget that your legs, under a stack of sheets and blankets, are nearly fleshless. You know the doctors by name, and they you. You know which nurses will glide in to usher each dumbstruck family member from the room hours after you've passed to the next world. Hours they've spent sobbing, wondering, and pleading, your chest still rising and falling in rhythm endlessly, it seems, as though the only barrier between you and them or the blissful sleep of recovery, a dream of being lifted with love and carried home. Thank you.